This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. I am back in my dad's old preacher car. Yay! Picked it up. Got it taken care of. Got the new transmission in. And it's running. That is all we care. Has its own little creaks and groans and all that stuff, but we don't care. It is a car. Now, the next thing is, I told my son-in-law, the next thing is I need to get it detailed. I need to get it prettied up a little bit because it's, you know, got some just light surface scratches and it just needs to be cleaned really well. And we have a person in the church who does that work as a fundraiser for Speed the Light. And I think he said it, you know, he said, now he may charge you $150, $175 for that. I said, sold, done. He said, well, that's kind of a lot of money. Sold. Yeah. So I am headed home a little early today. We've been needing to bury the power line for the little rock house out on our property, because the power line now swings right underneath an oak tree, and we've been trimming that oak tree back to keep the tree away from the power lines, and we just keep trimming that tree back, and it's such a beautiful old oak tree. I feel bad every time I'm cutting a branch off the thing. So, you know, we decided last year that we would go ahead and bury the power line for it. So that's been, you know, a little project that's been on the back burner and side burner and front burner and back burner and et cetera, back and forth. But I think we're front burnered on it now. And a neighbor is actually coming over to dig the trench for me. And he left work a little early. He's headed home to do that. So I had a meeting at 4 o'clock and then suddenly didn't have a meeting at 4 o'clock. And I said, okay. So I thought I'd go ahead and head home and see if we can't be out there when he gets there, and that would be better, because we can just kind of go over the particulars, although it's pretty straightforward, so, because it's basically just going from a telephone pole diagonally across to where the breaker box is on the house, and I've called Dig Right, and they've come out and looked at it. Theoretically, everything's good. So we'll see. Hopefully it's good. Lots of excitement. We did get closed this week, so we're officially closed from a major client for the year, or for January. Got closed. That all went fine. Did our harvesting on Monday. That all went fine. Jesus is good and kind to us. Have small groups tonight, but it's just fellowship night, so that should be fun. Just gotta get home and do some vacuuming and get that all under control. But we should be able to get that done. And I get to eat in less than an hour. Whoop, whoop. So that'll be great. It'll be just great. Costumes are fine. This is Steampunk Cupid Week, which is my little costume that I had done because I had decided Cupid was probably tired of being portrayed as a baby dressed in droopy diapers, droopy drawers. So I had actually made this costume probably 4 years ago now. 3 years? 4 years? Probably 4 years. So, you know, people seem to enjoy it. It's a little quirky and steampunky and blah, 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 blah. It has red velvet leggings with it. So yeah, it's fine. The problem was is that I had lost my back plate that holds the wings on. So I remade that last night. And then in addition to that, the velvet coat that I used, which was always tight. It was always tight. The zipper on it gave up the ghost because it was always tight. And so I had to hand sew a new zipper into it. That's not quite as fancy as the old zipper, but that's okay. So I got that done as well this week, and I have just a little bit of finishing up I need to do on the costume. Need to get it on tonight to make sure I know for when I get dressed in the morning what I'm doing and all the pieces and where they go and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that should be fine. That should be fine. We should be okay there. Anyway, so costumes are fine. The next really big costume that I have, according to the schedule, will be the National Nude Day costume, which is the nudie suit homage to Nudie Cohen, who is of the Nudie Rodeo Taylor's fame. He was the guy who did the gold lame suit for Elvis Presley. And I've told that story about, you know, National Nude Day and et cetera, et cetera. So I do have a lot of the pieces in for that. I will be working on that shortly. There's a possibility we have another costume that might be intervening in that, but I'm still working on details on that, so I will just refer to that as the unnamed project for now. And we'll go from there. So yeah, that's good. The writing seems to be going fine. I am on track, where I'm supposed to be, and I'm heading down the home stretch. By the end of this weekend, I will theoretically be at 120,000 words. Should be a little over that, about 121,000 words. And I have 3 weeks left of writing, so that should put me at about 150, which is the target. I'm still not exactly sure what I'm doing for the epilogue, but we'll find something. We always find something, so we'll find something. So yeah. Well, as I'm talking about this, I may know what I'm supposed to do for the epilogue. So we'll see. I just had an idea that might be. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. I need to focus on what I'm doing, which is the podcast right now. So anyways, that all is well there. I will have to probably immediately get to vacuuming floors and cleaning floors because we do have small groups tonight when I get home. So that means I need this to be a little shorter. And because of that, then, I came across an interview that Dave Rubin had done with Robert Malone. That may not mean, that name might not mean anything to you, but Robert Malone is a very interesting person that I felt like some of this information was really important not to lose. And we'll just see how this all develops out in the years and years to come. Because there is really something significant and important that happened in the whole COVID stuff. And it's a little disturbing, and it's important and profound, and so it's worth talking about. Again, this is a lot like we're just putting a stake in the ground, you know? It's just a stake in the ground to say this is where I thought we were at this time in our life, and we'll just see how things play out. Because one of the things about all of the COVID stuff is there are plenty of people who thought COVID was one thing, and they made estimates about what was going to happen, and then that didn't happen, and other things happened, and I like to think that I was pretty close to having my antenna up and going, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. So far, that seems to have panned out. I did not get the vaccination. I am glad I did not get the vaccination. The more information that comes out on the vaccine is I am glad I did not get the mRNA vaccines, period. Certainly there was a lot of push for a lot of people to do that. If I have any regrets on all of that, it would be that when my wife said, you know, I think I should get the vaccine, I said, that makes perfect sense to me, sweetie. Because if I knew then what I know now, I might have just told her, that's a bad idea, don't do that. But we'll deal with whatever fallout there is from that. I was glad I had sufficient information, because even with the vaccine, when Lynette did get COVID, it was Delta. When she did get COVID for the first time, she was dangerously close to going into the hospital. And unfortunately, because of the way the hospital was running their stuff, for someone like Nett, going in the hospital with shortness of breath, not being able to breathe, the chances are they would have put her on a ventilator. Once they got her on the ventilator, things go downhill quick with COVID and a ventilator. And so the fact that we could keep her out of the hospital with a combination of ivermectin, and then when she did start losing her breath, we knew that, yes, you need to go on a cortical steroid inhaler right now, and that her doctor was willing to prescribe that for her, meant that we could get her on that, get the inflammation knocked down, and keep her out of the hospital. So those were all good things. So I'm grateful, because I did know of many people who it didn't go that way for them, and I had a close friend who ended up in the hospital and ended up dead, simply because there was no early treatment. There was, oh, you have COVID, just stay at home until you can't breathe, and then we'll admit you to the hospital. So I feel like I have navigated this pretty well, but all through the whole COVID thing, there was a lot of really interesting things that were happening, and they were really head scratchers. And the more information that has come out, the more I've scratched my head. And if anything, what COVID did, I feel like, was exposed the whole underbelly of the medical industrial complex that exists for nothing more than to make as much money as possible, no matter what it does to the people that it involves. So there has kind of been a loss of innocence for me in terms of that, but when I hear interviews such as Dave Rubin's interview with Robert Malone, that simply reinforces that. So Robert Malone is a very, very interesting person. he, I believe, is a medical doctor. He has worked with viruses and vaccines and all that kind of stuff for years. He was very adept at navigating the whole governmental FDA approval, medical stuff, all that, getting through all that and realizing what needs to be done, forms filled out, and how to navigate that. And he had worked as a consultant. He had his own company. Oh, rats. Sorry. We're behind a school bus, and the school bus is making stops, and then all of a sudden people slam on their brakes. he had his own company for a while, and they were doing medical research, and then he got kind of tired of corporate America, and so he started his own consulting firm, and he's just been consulting with businesses behind the scenes. So this trip is going to take longer because we're behind a school bus. I may get a phone call here pretty quickly, and if I do, well, I'll just have to pause and then I'll come back to this. So, anyways, kind of behind the scenes, working with businesses and lots of contacts in the whole medical vaccine, FDA, you know, all of that, because made himself a good living doing all of that. And then, if I've got my stuff straight, it was like in January of 2020, he got a message from a friend, call something, and I believe this friend was in Wuhan, saying that, yeah, there's something going on here, and it doesn't look good, and this could be a problem. So one of the things that Robert Malone said is that at that point, he feels like the Chinese government understood there was a problem. He didn't really feel like it was intentional, but he does feel like this virus was engineered accidentally or intentionally at the Wuhan, but the release of it was not intentional. He doesn't feel that. It was just an accident, which accidents happen. He said, what is of note is that the Chinese government shut down all domestic flights out of Wuhan, but they kept the international flights going. And he feels like that was done because the Chinese government wanted to get this thing spread around the world so that it would be kind of harder to figure out where things came from, and it would be harder to, you know, just sustain all the things that would happen to their economy, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, because if China had kept it contained to China, they would have taken the brunt of it. But, you know, if you ship it around the world, then the entire world takes the brunt of it. So that's neither here nor there. What really interested me more than any of that was he started talking about the whole process of vaccines and testing vaccines. And he said up until COVID, it was just accepted that it took 10 years to get a vaccine approved because there has to be so many tests. And he said they really deal with a three times rule, I think he called it, that you have effects, but those effects may only appear in 1 in 10 people, or they may only appear in 1 in 1,000 people, or 1 in 100, or 1 in 100,000 people. And in order to test for those things, you actually have to test three times as many people. So to figure out if you've got a 1 in 100,000 chance of a virus, of a vaccine causing a problem, you've got to test 300,000 people. And he said, if you're going to test 300,000 people and it's going to cost you $5,000 to $40,000 per person to test those, he said, you very quickly run into a lot of money. It's a lot of money to test a vaccine. And he said, in fact, if you look at the military, I think he said they're working on vaccines for nerve gas, all the different types of nerve gases, and they're not expecting to be finished with those vaccines until like 2050. So, I mean, it's a big deal. It takes a lot of time. So, Dave Rubin asked him, he said, so what was your first signal that something was wrong? And he said, well, my first signal was that he had heard about this in January, and so his wife, with more and more information coming out, his wife wrote a book about how to survive COVID, surviving, you know, the coronavirus. And he had helped her with it. And so in February of 2020, in February, early on, they published this book on Amazon about these are the things that you can do. And he immediately started a process where he said, look, it's going to take 10 years to get this vaccine taken care of. And so there's not going to be time to develop a vaccine. So we need to repurpose drugs. And so he had already gone to some industry contacts and he had gathered funds and he had started research on what drugs are available out there that might be efficacious, and let's start researching. In the meantime, he himself got COVID in, I think, January of 2020, because he went out to a conference in Boston. There was no understanding that it was in Boston at that point, but he came back and got really sick. And he was really, really sick. And his wife said, well, you probably have COVID. And so he said it was, you know, his lungs were hurting. He was really afraid that it was causing scar tissue on his lungs and that there were all kinds of, you know, things. And so he just started taking some of these drugs that he thought might be a help, just these off-brand, off-label drugs. He ended up finding one that I forget what it was. It wasn't ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, but he found one that really he felt helped him. And so he took that, he got recovered. So then he and his wife write this book, and they put this book up on Amazon in February of 2020. So this is still way on the front end of this thing. They put up a book about how to survive the coronavirus. And he said, and then Amazon took it down. He said they just took it down. And he said, usually when Amazon takes down a book, they'll tell you why they're taking down the book. But he said, in this case, they wouldn't say. They just took it down. They stonewalled them. And eventually, they gave him a reason. And the reason was this generic, well, it violated our community standards. So just a second. I'm going to need to do something here real quick, and I will be back. Okay, I'm back. Looks like everything's going fine. Okay, so Amazon takes it down. They won't say why. He said eventually they just came out and said, community standards, you violated our community standards. But they wouldn't tell him why. Now, what is crucially important to me about this story is this is February 2020. This is well before the decision to go for a high-speed vaccine, okay? This was well before those discussions, and yet, for some reason, I'm checking the mail. For some reason, there was already an effort in play to suppress information that there was any way to deal with the coronavirus. So this information is, and the information that's being suppressed is that, oh yeah, there are other options for dealing with the coronavirus. Because one of the things that happened with the coronavirus is that anything besides high-priced drugs, remdesivir, for instance, which was $3,000 a shot, anything besides remdesivir was just, oh yeah, that won't work. Oh no, that won't work. There's no early treatment that we can do. There's nothing you can do. You just have to go sit at home. And of course, that ginned up a lot more fear in everyone. And so you've got this situation where if you've got a guy who in February is having information suppressed, the question becomes, so who was pushing that early? Who was pushing that early to say, yeah, we want to make sure this information doesn't get out? So that was the early thing that happened. Him, you know, he was doing research in February of 2020 to alternative drugs. He said he gets a call. At one point, he got a call from a Canadian doctor. And this doctor is getting, you know, raked over the coals for the sin of prescribing things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And he was hoping that Dr. Malone could, you know, help the Canadian authorities understand the potentials of this. And there's nothing. And Robert Malone said, I don't know what I can do for you. He said they had a long conversation, and this doctor, they'd been doing some investigations. And in fact, this was once we started getting into the vaccines, that the Canadian, I think it was the Canadian government, one of the governments, was actually deleting records that were entered on the side effects of the vaccines. And the government was enticing children with ice cream to get the vaccines. You know, so then he thought, whoa. He starts hearing about these injuries and the gaslighting, the blacklisting and all that kind of stuff. And he thought, you know, this is a medical ethics issue. It's medical ethics. And so he decided that they could actually write an article on medical ethics, because you're not supposed to, after the Nuremberg Accords, you're not supposed to force people to get things. You're not supposed to inject things into people's bodies without giving them informed consent. So then at some point in all this, he gets the technical document. Pfizer, Japan actually put the technical document that Pfizer had put out in terms of testing the vaccine and what it was and those kind of things. In Japan, it got posted to a public website. Somebody picked it up. It was in Japanese, but all of the data was in tables in English. And so he had a friend that forwarded it to him, and he started looking through this, and he could not believe the shoddy work that was being done for it, because it was being rushed. So he sent it to another friend who was also in this, and thinking, oh, well, this other friend's going to say, well, you have to understand this, that, and the other. And the other friend wrote him and said, yeah, no, you're right. It's grossly inadequate. So he went to write an article and ask him, his friend, if he could quote him. And the friend was like, no, do not use my name on this. Because the friend could already see how stuff was, you know. So, and this was the same information that the FDA and Pfizer wanted to, you know, cover up for 75 years. So, you know, you go on, and he had a relationship with a lot of these people that were involved in this kind of stuff. And it just, you know, he said it was a shock to him. He said, because he knew that the World Health Organization would corrupt, but he was assumed that the world of his friends that he moved in was a different space and that they acted ethically. And he said early on, there were things that were clear. He said he had buddies at the FDA that early on saw that myocarditis was a problem with these vaccines. And also the reactivation of latent DNA viruses like shingles and those types of things. And he said they knew that. And they just kept going. So, and he's talking about the latest stuff that's coming out with the vaccines. And he said at one point that he does not believe that we are through realizing all the side effects that there are with these vaccines. And he said, I'm hoping we're through. He said, but we're in a hole and we just keep continuing to dig it deeper. He said one of the things that's been interesting about this whole thing is that he really believes that there was a psyops operation, a military level psyops operation that was going on behind the scenes to convince people there was nothing they could do if they got COVID. The only thing they could do is wait for the virus. And once they got the virus, everybody would have to get the virus. He said, when you look at all of the things behind the scenes, which it'll be fascinating to see if that's what happened. And he said, all of that fear and all of that uncertainty and all of that pressure, that the only solution is the vaccine. He feels like it really led to this mass psychosis that he said, really, there was only about 15 to 20% of people who were resistant to that. And he said, that's why you see people that were just coming out and saying crazy things. Like, well, they didn't get the vaccine, so they shouldn't, you know, get a doctor's appointment. They say, and he said, because you've got people that are in this deep mass formation psychosis stuff. And, you know, he's saying, look, you know, we really need to understand of what happened to these people, and the fact that, you know, we need to forgive where we need to forgive and that we need to move on, but we really need to figure out what had happened here and move forward from there. And my beloved's home, and it's time for me to go. So I recommend it. The full interview is on Locals, Dave Rubin's Locals, but there is also on YouTube several excerpts from it. So if you want to go out to YouTube and search for Dave Rubin, R-U-B-I-N, and Robert Malone, M-O-L-O-N-E, M-A-L-O-N-E, really fascinating stuff. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.